We're turning in our discussion tonight to the words that come out of the mouth of Enoch as he catches the revelation of a climactic event in the end of the age, in which he writes concerning the sons of light, that they shall be stirred of God. The acts of the sons of darkness shall cause them to rise with anger. Wrath shall rise in their countenance, and they shall cleanse the household of the Most High. Now we have a similar statement in the book of Zechariah, which demonstrates that which the prophet 4,000 years before Christ described, after his spiritual experiences of having been taken into the presence of the Most High, escorted into the fastness of space in one of the fastest of vessels and vehicles of type, and having traveled into the dimensions and throughout the greatness of creation, he's told of the things that will affect earth and the race of which he is a part. He's given the reason for his own ministry, which was demonstrated historically as one of the greatest among the patriarchal age. But he foresaw a climactic hour when the peoples of God would be scattered out over the earth as nations. When he saw these nations and these peoples as God's household in the earth. When he saw also that there had entered into the land of God's household what he describes as the sons of darkness. The sons of darkness who gather from their strongholds in various places of the earth, who plot together in secret assembly, and who gather together with their planned and designed program for the overthrow of God's kingdom. And then Enoch tells about how these sons of darkness with their conspiracies, seek to gain control of the economy of the people, holding even their ability to trade in bondage. He talks about how they would set up false prophets, and they would set up false leaders among the people, and they would prophesy the doctrines of Lucifer, the fallen angel, both for economy, as for politics, as for a way of life. And he said that these strangers would seek, therefore, by their flattery and by their cunning, to proclaim the greatest age of diamond history, but these sons of darkness would be seeking by this policy also to bind people with the repetition of their era until men's minds were as though they could no longer resist. And then it said the spirit of the living Yahweh descended upon the sons of light, and they came up out of their apparent sleep, and they challenged the sons of darkness. And it says they perceived what had been done unto them and what had been done into the house of their father. And then the words of Enoch rise, and he said that therefore wrath will rise up in their countenance, and they shall drive the sons of darkness from the house of Yahweh. Someone said, where is the house of Yahweh? The house of Yahweh is where his people dwell. For he refers to you as his household, and he talks about you as the very temple of the living God. That's one of the reasons why one of the declarations of the scripture concerning your race was it was to come out and be separated and separate from the peoples of other races and other backgrounds, other philosophies and other pagan religions. Because you were the temple of the living God. You were the house of the living God. The spirit dwelling in you was life of his life and spirit of his spirit. And therefore there was no way that you could bring together the light and the darkness or cohabit with the darkness. Come out from among them and be separate or segregated, and touch not the unclean thing, so that I can be a father unto thee and thy children after thee in all of their generations. This was the word of the Apostle Paul in Corinthians. This was his declaration of a similar vision to that which Enoch saw 4,000 years before Christ. We can well recognize the great spiritual aptitudes which vision has brought upon our race, and how we have had the ever-increasing evidence of the spiritual forces, which as we described to you this afternoon in the mysteries of spiritual birth, the great secrets of some of these theological mysteries that have been contained in the knowledge of these facts. We'll have more to say about that next Sunday afternoon when we talk about the law of the Spirit, the race question. But we cite unto you that the achievements that have been yours, the civilization that we talk about now is Western civilization, because the whole progress of divine light and wisdom has followed your race down out of the high steps, in its migrations up out of the areas of Mesopotamia and Palestine through the Caucasian Pass after the historic events that carried them in the days of Shalmaneser and Sennacherib into these areas of Assyria and into Europe for the settling of Western Europe and the final rise of what we call Western civilization, whose highlights of culture again we find extracted out of the great wisdom schools of Enoch and Job that existed down in Egypt in the day that they therefore built it, transplanted in the days of Plato to Egypt, transplanted with migrating Israel when they came out of their captivity to fulfill the invasion of Europe as the Caucasian entrance for colonization. The history of your race, Aryans, sometimes identified with ancient Persian, their migrations, identified with the Manu of India and of ancient Asia, and of course with the peoples we now know, Anglo-Saxon, Scandinavian, Nordic, Basque, Lombard, Germanic. We discover here the seed line of a race. Its history, its wisdom, its guidance, always identified with the mighty monotheism of the one God, their Father, and with that strange spiritual stimulation which can be found in the thought and the vision of your race. It's quite evident that what we know of technological achievement in modern Western culture has progressed out of that race. When Oswald Spengler wrote Decline of the West and Men and Techniques and many of the other volumes which he wrote, you will note that he was greatly disturbed with what he saw was an infiltration and an invasion of the great nations of the Western world, a breaking down of racial self-respect in the great cosmic consciousness of the relationship of this race with the God that had begotten them, inspired them, and stirred them on. And with this recognition, he would have applied all the essential principles for the preservation of not only a superior wall of separation against absorption or the settling in your lands of strangers who are outside of your race. Strangely enough, the things that he feared, the things he talked about, and the things he anticipated would bring the downfall of the Western world were actually a violation of divine law, for that which the scriptures had ordained had also been that though you might serve the world, that you might lead the world, that you might guide the world, you were never to try to absorb the world. That the great design of the enemy would be to try to sell you on propaganda oft-repeated to change your way of life and listen to the appeal of the darkness. And no wonder it was that in the days of Enoch, he talked about how these sons of darkness would therefore lead with oft-repeated error until the error put the children of God to sleep, until such hour as God suddenly, in judgment, stirs his children with spiritual power, awakens them out of their sleep, and they start to fight back against the darkness. And with it, they start to proclaim, "Thus saith the Lord." And with each cry of "Thus saith the Lord," they are suddenly attacked in their own land, opposed in their own countries by these so-called super-intellects of decadence that come out of the sons of darkness. They're called antisocial, and they're told that they, instead of being the leaders of civilization and of culture, instead of representing the preservation of life, have suddenly become those that would be seditious against world government and seditious against the Satan's plan for the earth. And then they would be challenged with hate, and they would be told that they were not of, and they would be questioned even as to their sanity. This, my friends, was the part of the vision which the prophet saw. And also Jesus said, "Let me tell you that this is the lot that they would supply for you." Why, they would even take you before the synagogues and before the magistrates, and they would charge you with these things, and they would seek to throw you in prison, and they would seek to destroy you. Thus said Jesus also concerning this age. And you have arrived at such an age, and you are in such a punitive time. However, the reason why it is possible that even highly organized minorities so far beneath the number of our great Christian majorities within these nations of God's kingdom can accomplish these things is because actually the people of that society are exactly as the scripture said they would be. They have become asleep. They have also been subtly mesmerized and hypnotized by the oft repetition of error. But error that's honeyed up to make it appear as though it were good, to make it appear as though it worked for all the advantage of everybody on the face of the earth, and then seeks to make everybody socially conscious of a responsibility to create a social and economic equity and parity between every individual on the face of the earth and the children of God's kingdom who by vision and initiative have created what they possess by their energies and by their work. No design upon the part of Lucifer in buying the hordes of Asia and of Africa to request that they do something to achieve this which would be their part in this game, other than the conquest of God's kingdom and warfare against the forces of righteousness. We are being constantly told about our obligation to lift the world economically to our level. We are hearing about the grand, tremendous programs of New Frontiers, and our programs have started out in the days of the New Deal and have been degenerating ever since. And with that same course, we have watched the load and the burden economically that has fallen upon your shoulders until you, by the fractious policies of men brainwashed whose leadership is questionable, today every piece of property in the United States has been phonily put in hock to these who have contributed nothing but have lived as parasites upon you. Until you stand in 1962, even at this time, $1.25 trillion in debt, with not enough money to cover the money you've given away that could draw your gold out, not enough to cover your currency, and the most powerful nation, and certainly one of the wealthiest nations on the face of the earth from the standpoint of really wealth created and technological abilities to produce, But the money that moves these goods has suddenly been in the hands of the international forces of darkness so tied up that today people are afraid to move one way or the other because they do not know what the results are going to be. Let me tell you that God Almighty has given you some prophecies which we have mentioned in the past, one of which constitutes the fall of this political economic system of world Babylon, this power that migrated with Satan's own household and at this hour holds such economic stranglehold over the nations of the world. I think it a rather interesting thing that every secret thing now is coming out and being made known. Remember a few years back, within the last 20 years or more that we know of, very, very few people understood what was really going on behind the scenes and throughout the world. Very few people really understood that Satan had a household, he had a race. Actually, many churches were calling these people the chosen people, even though Jesus had pointed out who they were and said they were of their father, Lucifer, and they would do the very works of their father. Churches were blind not only to this, but people also were blind to it. And these forces could declare themselves clean from something somewhere in the world and find that open arms and open door within our nation was open to them. Wives of presidents like ancient Jezebel would open the doors to these refugees and bring these pagans within our country. Till under the days of Roosevelt, an unassimilatable host of these forces dedicated to the destruction of our society continued to flow in with increasing numbers. We point out to you that in the processes which were being worked, that the conspiracies of world communism, of world socialism, of centralized international control of all finance and world banking, the design, control, and power of these forces are all one. With it also the social revolution, which they designed to overthrow the achievements of your initiative and your private enterprise and your constitutional freedom. Well, as they saw that the greatest production lie in this nation, they therefore wanted to capture that production, and they wanted to turn it to their own process of using its strength for the furthering of their revolution. All through these years, we were listening to the constant story of universal brotherhood. You know that this was one of the anesthesias that they used to put people to sleep, universal brotherhood. And this brotherhood was to give you a responsibility to share and to bestow, irrespective of any possibility of contributing an effort or an energy, that which you had upon the peoples all over the world with the idea that you would bestow all these things upon them and lift their standards. That was the story. And so we have watched as we listen to the words of the prophet, my leanness by leanness. He tells us that these liberals have dwelt treacherously with us. And they have given away of our substance all over the world. And suddenly the nation wakes up and says, my leanness, what's happened to it? Well, the treacherous dealers, generally new dealers on down to new frontier dealers, have dealt treacherously with us and dispersed our wealth all over the world. And suddenly we discover that they gave away even the checks against the collateral we held to back up our own currency. These things have happened in your time. 20 years ago, nobody would have believed that things would progress to the point where we would have accepted the sovereignty of a world government and surrendered any part of our independence in it as these strange forces spoke out within. Or that we would suddenly join with the enemy and turn against our own allies to try to destroy their leadership and their achievement in the colonial development of the world and the guiding of the pagans and the savages in the corners of the earth. There is little doubt that we are in a most unique time. But something has happened within the last few months, and we say the last few years, for though a great number of people have been speaking and seeking to educate regularly, and I can think of numbers, and they've been trying to inform the nation as to what was going on, people slept on, and a few thousand here and a few thousand there understood or heard. And then as events progressed, the prophecies that were made by those that understood these things began to come to pass. God raised up voices all over, voices that were heard in Washington among congressmen and among senators. He raised up voices among the civil population. I wonder if any of you have read Gerald L. K. Smith's Cross and Flag 15 years ago. Remember that the things that were being discussed at the time of the war and thereafter, and which many people said, oh, this is extreme, and these things have never come to pass, and there won't be any world super government, and there won't be any attempt to abolish white man's leadership throughout the world, and there won't be any design to surrender our independence. And this is all additional fanfare of those who incite people when you say they're going to try to make a socialist revolution and a socialist nation out of us.
But from that period 15 years ago to now, portfolio after portfolio of government has passed, as it did in the Roosevelt days, and extended now with the seizing of more power, both by executive and judicial branch, and through the prophecies made out of that background, a political astute evaluation of what was going on in America have now become history. I'm going to tell you this. A great number of people that used to say, oh, this must be terrible, this is rabble-rousing at that time, are now willing to say that we were wrong. We should have risen up against this 15 years ago. You should have risen up against it, my friends, in 1929. Strange as it might seem, the design, the conspiracy which is being wrought in your time has now reached such in part that it is not as hard or as difficult as it was to awaken people to the fact that they're in great danger. In fact, the Spirit of God has referred time and time again to the fact that I will yet be inquired of to do some of these things for my people. You'll hear statement after statement in the prophecies of Scripture that the people of the Most High God are going to accomplish a great victory, retake the kingdom, as God's covenants which are made constantly concerning restoring the kingdom back in the hands of His people. All of them relate to a spiritual awakening that caused them to throw off the lethargy of propaganda, to be freed from the influences that have held them bound, and to suddenly look out on their own nation, the nations of God's kingdom, with a clear new light. And I'm going to tell you that there is no fury on the face of the earth like the fury of white Christian civilization when it realizes how betrayed and built it's been. I'm going to tell you that the world discovered that there was no more deadly fighting forces in the world than the nations of God's kingdom when finally they were forced into the field of battle. Nor, my friends, will there be anything that will be pursued so completely as the elimination from America of every destroyer that would destroy our society as the catalyst of awakening wakes up. You say, how do you know? All right, I can tell you how I know. I know of thousands upon thousands of people, yea, millions now, that were asleep a few years ago. I know when the numbers were in lesser groupings that can understand the things we're talking about. And the result was that as people woke up, everybody wakes up wants to do something. Everybody that wakes up wants to know how long it's going to be before we run these people out. See? Now, therefore, everywhere you go, you find out that the sons and daughters of God wake up, they want to march. So I'm going to tell you, as the rest of your society wakes up, it's going to be the fastest sweeping march to cleanse the nation ever seen in the history of God's kingdom. There shall be a nation saved in a day. Now listen. The devil isn't always as smart as he thinks. We are in the hands today of devils. Well, you say, now, Dr. Swift, you don't really mean it. Yes, I literally mean we're in the hands of devils. Now, if you were Chinaman, I'd say we're in the hands of Chinamen, but we're in the hands of devils. You say, are there any Chinese devils? Oh, yes, they run pawn shops over there, too. But we're in the hands of devils. If devils have children, then they're devils. They're not always little devils because they grow up. You know, in the vocabulary of Jesus, and this is the wisest of all vocabularies, he put in their bracket devils. And devils follow the deviation of their father. Their design is to hold the earth and to destroy the kingdom. The program of God is to break devils in power. Well, you say that's a terrible mean one, though, because it would eventually have to eliminate devils. Well, eliminating devils here may be the salvation of devils one of these days, because you're still going to see the day when every devil bows the knee. But I'm going to tell you, in that same procedure, with the vastness of God's grace, there is no relieving you of the responsibility that God has given you as a people. When He permitted your coming to earth into bodies of flesh and transplanted His celestial sons from glory into this physical world, it wasn't just to find a way to get back. It was to occupy the earth and build His kingdom, to fulfill that prayer, Thy kingdom come, Thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. A kingdom is not only a realistic kingdom, it's a political kingdom. It has a throne. It has government. It actually intends to rule the world from one end of the earth to the other. The blueprint which Christ extols concerning this is to divide the nations into two categories and to turn to the white nations of Christendom, the sheep nations of His kingdom, and give them the administration in the determination of His purpose and rule over the goat nations with firmness in order that there'll be peace and righteousness in the earth. So you see, the plan is rule. Don't let anyone come along and say, the religious program of God's kingdom must stay away from politics and stay away from economy. You know, there's nothing the devil would like to have you do than to stay away from politics, stay away from economy, stay away from making yourself felt in your community and heard as a force. He'd like to have you just let that all be turned over to his activities so Satan can run for Congress, Satan can move into the Senate, Satan can control your society with his children, and he'd just be happy if all you do is sit down, sing hymns, and get ready to go to heaven. I don't know what they'd be proud of when you got back. If that's all you had to show for it, was you sat down and retreated and waited to go. So a lot of people said, oh, I'm so weary of this battle. How much battling you've been doing? Somebody said, oh, but all but this poor gets in this situation. I'm just weary of it. All right, then throw it over. Remember the words of the Apostle Paul? The Apostle Paul came into the congregation. The congregation was telling about how much they'd resisted and how weary they were with battle and with struggle and all this opposition against these evil forces in their community. And the Apostle Paul just took his coat off and said, take a look at this back. Got that many wounds? I fought with beasts in the Colosseum at Ephesus for my faith. I have fought with gladiators. I have resisted the wounds of those that have attacked me. They beat me 40 times with a lash. You know that 40 times with the number of pieces of metal and of glass that was in that lash, there were over 1,000 wounds on the back of Paul. Apostle Paul said, you said you've had a hard time, you've resisted. He said, have you resisted yet against blood, unto blood? You know, we have a lot of people today that have a rather sad outlook on religion. They think that Christianity has no challenge. They think it's a pacifist movement of surrender. If the Apostle Paul was to come into their presence and was suddenly could throw off of his back the tunic and say, look at these wounds. Don't talk to me about what you've done. Have you resisted yet against the blood? Well, they said, oh, we don't want to resist the blood. We'd rather be a martyr. Well, I wish the martyrs would go. You say, why? We've had youth for martyrs. They've taken great stands. Those men died for their faith and received the wounds of it. But like the Apostle Paul, if there was a chance to grab a sword and win, he would resist. I'm going to tell you this. Jesus one time had a private conference with Pontius Pilate, the Roman governor of the province of Palestine, even as he had previously admonished his disciples. And in the hour when they would have offered him the crown, and he took the course of the chalice and refused that crown on Palm Sunday, which we historically recognize every year, he also told, as the ancient record tells us, the day will come when my servants will fight and the kingdom is not going to be delivered to the Jews. Before Pontius Pilate, he again said, when Pilate had asked him, art thou a king? He says, thou hast declared it. Then how is it that you stand before me? Is thy power great enough? Is it of heaven or of earth? Jesus said, if I will, I could bring in whole legions of angels. If I would, I could raise an army in the earth. But not for this hour. I have a task that first must be performed. And so he told Pontius Pilate, the hour, however, will come when my servants will fight and the kingdom will not be delivered to the Jews. Twice now that statement is placed in history. Now I'm going to tell you, it would make it obvious that all the power behind the processes of trouble for the kingdom must be the Jews. Well, I think that's quite true when you talk about devils, and Jesus said that's who they are. And I assure you now and for all time that this is a species. And they therefore have no capacity for spiritual enlightenment. As you may know, spiritual enlightenment, they can't understand the words of Jesus because they can't hear his speech, he said. So expect the species to be what they are until something new is made out of them in some future date. But in the meantime, under the rules and the regulations and directions of authority, Lucifer and his household battle for the earth to destroy it in tyranny, pain, and evil. And you, the nations of God's kingdom, have a responsibility first to yourselves as a society of God that his kingdom shall survive, and then to the earth that you might carry this victory to the ends of the earth. So you are in a period of strange and undue influences. I think this is rather well marked out when we see how Christian nations went to the ends of the earth, how they went into the jungles where savage ate savage and warred against anybody else, how they sought to tie up in the pagan countries the trade lanes of the earth and the movement of peoples, how your race had a certain commission and a certain destiny as it moved and spread out. It proclaimed one and a true and living God. It proclaimed wisdom instead of darkness. It proclaimed liberties by faith instead of superstition. And civilization started to come to the jungles. They didn't have to depend on eating one another or on ill-provided weapons of survival. Suddenly, whole areas of the jungle became food-producing areas. New developments, new relationships, new ways of providing livelihood to exchange for the goods essential to life throughout the world developed.
and churches and hospitals and schools of all branches of the Christian faith were developed even in the Congo. This not only happened there, but under British administration, it happened in India, it happened in South Africa, it happened by the use and the advent into these areas of the earth of all branches of the white race. It happened by the Belgians in the Congo, or by the Portuguese into Angola, or into the many parts of the earth in Kenya, South Africa, Rhodesia, by branches of the Anglo-Saxon household. Do not think for a moment that pressing out into the earth was not destiny, thus you also came to this land and started again its development. You pushed your way to the coast. You developed it in the faces of Asiatics who had swarmed over this land, fighting even some of your earlier colonial settlers of your race from 600, 700, and 800 years before and more. Some going back even as far as 800 B.C. You watched your race progress and develop, and this was your destiny. This was the best destiny the world had ever known. This was the plan of God for a race and a people and a nation. Did you know one of the strangest things is charged this week in United States News by the Premier of Portugal? He says it's hard for us to understand why such a great leader of civilization, such a great resistance against the communist war, befriends all of its enemies and turns upon all of its friends. Well, that's pretty hard for you to understand because that's not the way you think, but it's not hard for me to understand because I know in the seats of leadership in our government, devils have advised presidents, controlled men, mesmerized, and used every process from dope to supernatural hypnotic influences, and they have directed America down the road of the devil instead of the road of the people. They have made mockery of our faith, of our Constitution, of our society, and it's time America eliminated the devils from our society. I think it's a rather significant thing, then, that we look on our relationship. We joined the devil's United Nations, which violated every concept of our forefathers that called for us to retain our sovereignty. We violated the law of the Bible, which warned us not to be unequally yoked with pagan nations under any type of union. You hear the voices of those that would still put you to sleep in current magazines saying, this is not a program for a world federal union. This is only a program for a working alliance, a great talking point for a nation, a great area where we can gather around one table and talk things out instead of warring. This is a lie. For the program is a world federal union in which you are outvoted 6-1 by all the pagan powers of the world, ruled and controlled by central international banking of world jewelry. Let me point out to you that whereas you went down into the Congo supporting the United Nations to force upon Belgium and these other white nations of Western Europe to surrender their colonies. The United Nations was intending to create a vacuum that the Soviet forces of world communism could pick up because the United Nations is nothing but a red conspiracy. And where it isn't operated by Moscow Reds, it's operated by local ones or by other pagans from Asia. We point out that this program of Antichrist must be opposed by every intelligent thinking Christian on the face of the earth. It must be opposed, if necessary, unto blood. So we watched what happened as communism moves in. We watched what happened in Leopoldville, the days of Lumumba and his red advisors. We saw what we prophesied would happen, and you may remember back several years ago, we told you exactly what was going to happen on the day they got their independence. We told you how red hordes already stirred by witch doctors were going to rape, pillage, murder, steal, and even set fire to their own assets. The greatest blood purge the white race has experienced in the areas that had developed took place in the Congo. Murder, rape, pillage, and the greatest fear program. And here stood the United Nations by with very little resistance. Here stood America by, still demanding that the Belgians get their troops out. And down where industrial development under white leadership in the Katanga province had worked in a cooperative manner with the natives they had now educated until they didn't want to live like jungle beasts. They didn't want to be a part of a world communist society, which is what the organized collective Congo would be, because they had had enough white man's leadership and enough of the benefits of what can happen when they respond to it, that they didn't want to be taken over and they didn't want to be destroyed. And here was Katanga Province, the friend of the Western world and the friend of the United States, who looked towards the freedoms of our society, and they looked forward with hope that we would stand with them against this communist intrusion. We supposedly aiding the free world and leading against communism, demanded that they surrender to the Congo Federation, in which one of the leaders and chief of state at this very moment is none other than a communist who has stirred up his hordes for the mass murder of thousands of natives in their own jungle. Strange thing is that when the head of that state, selected out of the Negroes and placed there by white leadership, Tshombe, wanted no part of this, nor did those who were his white financiers, backers, and guides, he was told that he would have to surrender. And you saw the strange policy of American planes flying soldiers for invasion of Katanga. You watched your money used to bomb civilian populations. You watched yourself placed on the side of the Reds to stamp out self-determination where it first showed up in the Congo. You found yourself on the devil's side to the disgrace of this flag and to the everlasting despising of the leadership that produced it. When Moshe Tshombe, representing a fighter of a free world against communism, wanted to visit the United States, wanted to tell our Congress where he stood, wanted to tell the peoples of our nation, your State Department refused a visa to let Moshe Tshombe come to the United States. He could not come. We could roll out the red carpet for Tito from Yugoslavia. We could roll it out for Khrushchev, who should have been hung in Washington when he arrived. Literally had some of Ethan Allen's boys at that airport that day. Let me tell you something. I hold here a press release in your own local Herald Express. This is what it says. Washington, June 29th, Assistant Secretary of State Soapy Williams, that's a pretty good name for our men and Williams, has extended an invitation to visit this country to Jomo Kenyatta, the former leader of Kenya's terrorist Mau Mau. Well, we've been putting pressure on the British Empire through the internationalists, the central bankers, and the ability to bankrupt nations to force Britain to leave go of Kenya colony and break its covenant with its own colonists. We've been trying to force the relinquishing of all of the British colonial empire and of all of the members of the Commonwealth, which are independent but are living in native countries. So what about this man Jomo Kenyatta? This man is one of the most evil dark devils in the continent of Africa. He was a witch doctor who helped to formulate the Mau Mau program. He was a deep student of all the mysticisms of satanic witch doctrine process. He literally worshipped Lucifer. He prayed before the shrine of evil. He was able to produce deadly evidences of satanic miracles. No, they didn't heal, they killed. They didn't do anything good, they injured. They didn't give back the life to the lame, they made them lame. All the catastrophe of witch doctor practices of evil backed by satanic power was upon Jomo Kenyatta. Jomo Kenyatta had acquired wealth out of pearls and out of gold gathered from the natives beneath him. And he used his influence and he went to Oxford University. You know, it's a strange thing to me how you make the scholarship program when you're nothing but a witch doctor out of the jungle to go to Oxford. No, our colleges are jammed up now with people that are trying to pass the entrance examinations to get in after they've gone through our high schools and our junior colleges. How does a witch doctor come out of Africa and get into Oxford? That's because, my friends, there's enough Rhodes Scholars that have become influential in government that are following the directions of the international banking destroyer who said, this is what we want. So what did Kenyatta do? Kenyatta, while he was in Oxford, in order to get his degree, and he's Dr. Jomo Kenyatta, by the way. How did he get his degree? He wrote the most important treatise that has ever been written on the craft of the witch doctor. It's about a two-volume set, Jomo Kenyatta. That book talks about how service of Satan
appeal to Satan, and the demonic forces that work with it will strike down, will kill and maim, will deliver power, will do anything that the worshiper of Satan wants. It tells about their rights. It tells about the most obscene and evil and vicious of blood processes that which doctor employs among his own people, and their undying determination to exterminate everybody that's not black on the face of the earth. Having finished his work in Oxford, Kenyatta returned to become the most deadly witch doctor of them all. He formed the Mau Maus, whose vicious and bloody and obscene move used to strike at colonial farmers at night, would move down upon their fields, hamstring their cattle, disembowel their black servants who had joined in working for them, and in whole communities where they had nice little homes and they had their chapels and their hospitals, and the natives had never fared so well. The Mau Mau moved against them if they wouldn't betray the white man, murder his family, and burn down all their progress. The Mau Mau became a sign of terror. So constant did it attack that it destroyed great numbers of British military regulars, and they had to fight back with machine gun and with airplane and modern weapons against the stealth of the knife, the poison dart, and the spear of the jungle, as Kenyatta moved, with pain, with butchery, with savagery. White women were raped and staked upon stakes all over Africa, and the resulting determination of the whites that they would wipe out Mau Mau and Mau Mau leadership, until finally, having captured him and put him in prison, Kenyatta was taken by surprise and held captive. The British government would have executed him had it not been for the world government influences, the world socialism, communism, the United Nations, and the United States. They said, no, if you do anything to this devil, then they'll rise up everywhere. It's not humane. This man is a great fighter for liberty. Let him go. You know what they did? Under the pressure of UN, the devil's program, Kenyatta was released from prison. And the British government returned him back into the Kenya colony, and they bought him and built for him a beautiful residence, and they've given him political power, and now Kenyatta is the head of all the political activities of the Kenya colony. He said last week, every white man and woman and every Asiatic must leave Kenya colony, or we'll pack them up and send it with their remains out. And your government is tonight supporting Kenyatta and putting pressure for a speedy transition. Now, I think it's a rather interesting thing, this piece I hold out of the paper. That whereas your State Department, led by evil, would not permit coming into this nation Moise Tshombe, because he was against communism and because he was a resistant against this kind of evil, it has extended not only an invitation through Sophie Williams to Jomo Kenyatta, but it tells us that the State Department said that they will facilitate all of the assistance necessary to this elder statesman of Kenya politics. They will roll out the red carpet, and the State Department says, we are ready for him anytime, and we will give him a royal welcome in America. I tell you, he ought to be hung too. I'm not too sure that every Christian shouldn't pray that the judgment of God fall on every member of the State Department and any representative of our country that would give any attention to a witch doctor like this and bring him to America. All you need is one witch doctor like this, and the whole Muslim, ex, and Negro population will follow him like the Pied Piper of Hamelin. I think it's a rather significant thing, then, that this can come out in your newspaper. And I'm going to say, with all fairness to the Herald Express, it says that this man, Kenyatta, is responsible for all these Mau Mau atrocities and this vicious murder of Europeans. And it seems rather strange that our administration should welcome him with open arms in view of their past performance concerning the Congo and Tshombe and others. You know what this ought to do? This ought to make every white man that hears it seize. It ought to fulfill the prophecy of Enoch that wrath shall rise up in thy countenance. Let us remember that we as a nation have given away $81 billion to pagan India, while talking about this as the greatest democracy in Asia, which we want all Asia to pattern after, and she has never gone along with you, but has the most evil communist leadership in Krishna Menon, and the actual acceptance and cunning working with this policy of Mr. Nehru. And you are going to enforce the recognition of the rights of natives and of nations, but when she sees the Gulf provinces of the Portuguese, you just gave a little hand slapping and said, now we're against this, and you stood by and watched India steal Goa while you turned on the Portuguese because they won't turn the progressive colonies of Angola over to complete Negro rule and get out. If they did, white men would die there as they will die in the Kenya colony, as they will die also in Burundi and another one of the Belgian colonies in a few days as the Belgians are forced to leave. Two more areas as large as some of our New England states are to be turned over to the Negroes within the next few days. This, again, we point out, is the policy of disintegration that comes through a whole brainwashing policy, to say the least. What a great danger. If this was all so far removed from our country, it might be harder to awaken a people or to bring them to an understanding of their danger. But this nation is a Christian nation. This is a Christian society. We have been founded by all the representatives of those nations which came over here to settle, all the great nations of the Western world. We are Anglo-Saxon, Scandinavian, Nordic, Basque, Lombard, Germanic. We had faith in God. We had one background of a least common denominator in race. We started out with 13 colonies. Today we're 50. The nation of God's kingdom, strong and powerful, opening its sessions of its early government in its colonial life with prayer, basing its basic responsibility for moral obligations upon the Bible, recognizing the kingship of Christ, recognizing the spiritual values of our nation. And when the Articles of Confederation brought these colonies together that were never to be put aside, it was upon this realization that they were Christians and a Christian society dedicating themselves to perpetuate these freedoms and to preserve this new formed union. Now, when the Constitution was framed up, it was designed that it would protect and preserve this, even so stating that Congress would have no authority in the Bill of Rights to make a law concerning the establishment of religion. And this, my friends, was of course recognized as a Christian faith, though they hadn't spelled it out because it wasn't even conceived that anything else would be recognized in the United States. I want you to know that not satisfied with having sold progressive socialism to your society, and who you are today in the hands of a social welfare state led by madmen of the communist world. Well, you say you can't talk that way. Yes, we can. We can tell you we're not only led by madmen of the communist world who designed to make us a socialist society. In last week's United States News, it told us that Mr. Kennedy and his administration was angry because this recession, they think, is just a type attempt to punish you, because he talked out against the steel. And he said that unless this recession changed, it says in United States News that they're going to go to the left. Now, I don't know how far to the left you can go, but I think if they want to go much farther to the left, they just better take a boat and go over and join Khrushchev. Now, you know, it's a terrible thing to be on the right side from the leftist viewpoint. And when the leftists have the power, they make you, therefore, terrible people. So I'm going to tell you something's happening in America that's breaking through the 31% of the right-wingers. You know, the right wing is considered to be 31% its influence. Let me tell you something. The devil can overplay his hand. He can use the last straw that breaks the camel's back, and the explosion that occurs breaks over the 31% and moves into the 50s and the 60% of public opinion. You know, one of the devils around the high command is Mr. Schlesinger. This man is the conscience of Mr. Kennedy's administration. That's what we're told in the news reports of last week. And they accept him as Mr. Conscience. Well, it's like having the devil for an advisor on the matters of conscience. I think that was rather evident even in the United States News. For Mr. Conscience was even unhappy when left to the left, Mr. Rusk,
four political factors that he had to follow through with, because the government would never understand it if he didn't. He went over to see Franco concerning our bases and our relationship as it relates with Spain, which has always had good relations with America. Even in World War II, Spain never did anything against you. If Spain had played along with Germany and with Italy and all out opposed you, you could never have won, my friends, the areas around the Mediterranean. In fact, at the present time, there has never been the breaking of one agreement between Franco, Spain, and the United States. So Mr. Rusk had to go over there to make some negotiations. You know what the conscience of the administration, Hugh Schlesinger, said? He said to Mr. Kennedy, this shouldn't be. You shouldn't let this man go. You better bring him back. We should never let anybody representing our government, our Duke control Schlesinger outfit, we should never let them go to any country that has a fascist dictatorship. That's terrible. Let's be sure that we are on the side that never lets anybody go with us as a dictator. But the same Jew Schlesinger was over in Moscow visiting with Mr. Khrushchev, and as we said the other day, he let Mr. Khrushchev out shooting with trap, where all the pictures were taken of him shooting trap, and no Jew ever knew how to shoot trap anyhow. But the fact remains that there he was over there with Mr. Khrushchev. And he was hunting up to Mr. Khrushchev, and he came back to say, you know, there is a great design for progress in Russia, and they see things so like we do, and we can work with them, and we can work out a mutual program for disarmament and for peace and for the settlement of every problem. There's nothing to fight about. We must work in this there. This is the man who said we can't go see anybody or let anybody from our country go see anybody that is a dictator. But, of course, Mr. Khrushchev, he's not a dictator. He's a Jew parody. Strange thing is, he is their process in operation. So therefore, we have a little picture of what's going on. Khrushchev can come, and a communist leader is not welcome. When we enter into the Indonesian affairs, instead of helping the Dutch, we want them to suddenly release their possessions into the hands of those that oppose them. We just seem to be right on anything outside of our own country and not right on much on the inside. Well, you say, that's not good for a nation of God's kingdom. No, it's not good unless it wakes you up to make sure it'll never happen again. Now, listen. We have, from this platform, cited you on numerous occasions that the whole conspiracy to destroy your Christian civilization was to knock Christ and everything that related to truth out of your nation, your national life, was a Jewish conspiracy. Now, some people, that's strong because they didn't know anything about it, and they're suddenly surprised to find that the Jew's not their brother, and suddenly surprised to find that Jesus knew who he was all the time. So I point this out to you, that when a few months ago, all over, down in Miami, the Jews were suing the education, the branch of education, for having prayer in the schools. They were demanding, the courts, that no prayer or Bible reading take place in any of the schools of the areas around Miami and in Dade County and in Florida, because they didn't like any worship or recognition of Christ through God. And in New York State, they didn't like the fact that the state of New York had a very simple prayer, which was a part of the requirements of education in New York, that every educational system, school, and so forth, open with a simple prayer, asking God's blessing on their teachers and on their parents and on the pupils, and to guide them in good citizenship and as good students. You know, the Constitution said that the federal government has no authority to interfere in any affairs not delegated to them specifically in the Constitution, and the state has a right to have perfect control over its affairs and anything not delegated to the federal government. Now, education is one of the areas that is none of the business of the federal government, the Supreme Court, notwithstanding. Number two, the federal government has no law to intervene or make any regulation concerning religion. The Congress of the United States can't do that. Now, there was no design, and Congress did not create any, to interfere with the processes of worship. The state of New York has always required that there be recognition of God in their assemblies and in their educational system. Has supported in early days in the New England states and right on up into our own time. I can remember in the state of New Jersey, as well as in New York, that they had they opened assembly sessions with prayer and with scripture reading. They prayed in homerooms if there was no assembly. This was just a common practice, along with saluting the flag and singing the Star Spangled Banner. In fact, I hardly question whether they're going to let you do that anymore, because in the Star Spangled Banner, there's recognition of God. But the Jews said that this was offensive to them. Now, I want to get this across to you tonight. Don't you ever forget, the American Jewish Committee and the Jewish organizations and Jewish attorneys of the ADL and the Civil Liberties Union, these are the forces that want to knock prayer and Bible and Christ and God out of everything American. Before you start to rise up in any concept of propaganda, they've said that this is essential for the separation of church and state. This has nothing to do with any official church. Nothing to do with any denomination. America is a Christian country, and the Supreme Court on 5 occasions has ruled this is so. And I tell you what 5 Supreme Courts have said, this group of parasites are not, my friends, going to be able to destroy. For their decision has no more weight than the decision of 5 previous courts, and 5 previous courts in their opinion should surely outrank this bunch of knuckleheads. There's only one justice, Justice Stewart, that stood up for God. Just remember that. We'd do better to fire them all and just keep the one, you know. Now, it was the Jews that, having lost in the New York Supreme Court, carried it to the nation's Supreme Court. It was the Jews that were preparing to do this down in the South because they lost in Miami. With all their talk of brotherhood to take you in, they admitted that there was no brotherhood because they are Jewish. Witnesses said that it just turned their stomach and made it hard for them to study, and they couldn't stand it all day long after they heard a prayer that was prayed to a Christian God. And when the judge wanted to know if there was any difference between a Christian God and a Jew God, they made it very clear there was, that they worship one God and we another. Well, that's true. I'm glad the judge found it out. I hope the nation finds it out. For Jesus said, I have my Father and you have your Father. That's 2 different sources. Jews worship the devil from whence they came. We worship God who is our Father. This is a struggle for the earth, and unless you're about ready to surrender the earth, you better start fighting. Now I point out to you this, that the Jewish organizations have been working for years on trying to take God out of America. Well, you say they worship God, they worship their devil God. But they want to take true God and true worship out of America. Years ago, they held, several years back, a meeting in the Waldorf Astoria. And here the Jewish Congress and the Nye Brook of these organizations had this massive meeting. And I had a spy there. This spy stayed at the hotel and looked out in the banquet room. And they laid great volumes down on the tables of reports and material for every member to come. And one of their reports was how they were getting along with this program of taking away the tax exemption from all religious and Christian institutions, and how they were waging war against Christ and God in every phase of national, civic, and local life. This was the story of how they were unified in this action. So one of my friends liberated it and sent it to me. And we took this liberated volume several years ago, and we showed it to a great number of clergy. Oh, well, they can't do this to us. No, forget it. We showed it to Gerald Smith, who said this is a most serious document. Shortly after that, we showed it to Masonic Order leaders who felt somewhat disturbed, but not too much disturbed. One day we showed it to a high official of the Knights of Columbus, and he got very much disturbed. Soon I was called on to show this to the bishop of the Archdiocese of your city. From there it went to the then presiding cardinal, and from them it went to Rome. And then they sent it back to me, all nicely bound. Then it went up to the chief administrator and their hierarchy in Canada, and then it came back, and by this time their attorneys were starting to fight a fight that every minister should have been in. So protect themselves from the Jew conspiracy to destroy tax churches, partly by taking away the tax exemption status from religious institutions, is number one. This is the thing that caught their attention as much as any other phase of the fight. We have been aware and carefully scanning and watching this attempt to take God out of America and out of the nation ever since. We have discovered that in this strategy and in this policy, that they have been working night and day. And one of the most foxious instruments of our society is this American Civil Liberties Union. It defends communists and it works on destructive policies. I never find it generally working on anything constructive. Now and then they do something just for a grandstand play, but generally they're working against everything good and everything that's Christian. So their pressure was on. Now remember, you can't trust the Supreme Court very far because its decisions on immigration in the schools was based largely on the writings of sociologists who were themselves communist Jews. They even wrote communist opinions into their own opinions rather than the content of the Constitution, which would never have supported them. It's time that we delivered ourselves from the court. Now, on this matter, a sound asleep nation in many ways, 31% awakened to the dangers of socialism, suddenly were shocked last week. They were shocked by the decision of the Supreme Court when it suddenly ruled it was illegal to play in school. Only one dissenting Justice Stewart, whose position is stated in United States News and well taken, that this nation is a religious nation from the beginning, that we've done everything on the basis of this religious recognition. Every president has taken his oath of allegiance on the Bible. We've opened the sessions of Congress with prayer. We open the court with asking that God's blessing on this, our great court. That America is essentially a nation of Christian religion and of faith, and that this has been its heritage and its background, and he dissented with the court. But the court, my friends, with the exception of Mr. Frankfurter and one other, voted the wrong way, and Mr. Frankfurter didn't vote because since this whole thing was a Jewish action, he thought it was smarter, Mr. Baruch, to stay back in the deep grass and not participate. After all, we've got enough on Mr. Frankfurter that we should have impeached him a long time ago, the attorney for the Reds, the man that put Alger Hiss in, the man that was the character representative for Alger Hiss and Harry Dexter White, should be removed from the court when it was evidence that those that he put in positions of power by his influence were treasures for the Red Cross. Now I point out to you that it was no design to merely remove prayer alone from the schools in New York. It was to remove everything religious from our national life by a misinterpretation of power that the court does not have. Now, in this instance, I want to call your attention to the real truth of the matter, which goes back to that Nybrist statement of their designs and their motives. Justice Douglas said, "Our system of federal and state government is now honeycombed with a lot of illegal government unconstitutional financing of religious exercise. I think it's unconstitutional in its undertaking in whatever form it takes." Then in the footnotes of his opinion, Justice Douglas cited that chaplains for the Congress of the United States and in the armed forces and religious services in federal hospitals and prisons and the buildings of chaplains on our military reservations are all violations of the Constitution. Then Justice Douglas continued to serve the Jews by saying the use of the Bible in administering oaths to any of our federal representatives, the payment under GI Bill to any war veteran to attend a denominational college. You see, they can, under their GI Bill rights, they could have gone to colleges to study chemistry or to study medicine or to study anything they want, and some of them study theology, and he says to send one to school to study theology is against the Constitution. Listen, these fellows, these rights which were bestowed upon them were bestowed upon them for service rendered, and it was their right to determine what they wanted to study, not that, my friends, of a bunch of Jew-loving judges. I point out, therefore, he said it was against the law for any federal financing of anything that had anything to do with lunches, books, or anything, to any religious organization, and it was a violation of the Constitution to exempt from any kind of federal income tax or to give income tax to anybody for donations to any religious institution. Listen now, this is the most powerful hot potato to ever come out of the Supreme Court. This decision of Douglas should bring out the hemp. I tell you tonight that this man has for jewelry waged war on the church in all its ramifications. He's waged warfare on our Christian nation. He is as evil a destroyer as any communist member of the Comintern in Hebrew Khrushchev. It's time we found out How long in these United States? We're going to let evil influences like this destroy our national heritage. Let me tell you this. Mr. Douglas says, therefore, the reading of the Bible in public schools, the recitation of the Lord's Prayer, the teaching of the Ten Commandments, the observance of any kind of a devotional service, or the recognition of any religious holiday such as Easter or Christmas is a violation of the Constitution. Let me tell you something. America suddenly started to explode. You know, he said, my spirit will awaken these people, and as was spoken of by Enoch, wrath will rise up in their countenance. Now let's turn over here to the book of Zechariah. The book of Zechariah tells us, ask ye of the Lord the rain in the time of the latter rain, so that the Lord might bring the bright showers. You remember the book of Joel said, I'm going to restore on you not only the former rain, the latter rain, but to drive all the parasites out of your land and give you back everything these parasites have stolen from you. All right, now over here in Zechariah, he said, now, with this coming of the latter rain, the idols that spoke in vanity and the diviners have lied, and they told false dreams and they comforted in vain. Now they have destroyed part of the flock, and there's no shepherd. Now my anger is kindled against these shepherds, and I'm going to punish these goats, saith Yahweh. He says they're going to be mighty men, and they're going to tread down their enemies in the mire of the street in battle, and they're going to fight beside Yahweh. Now let's turn from this statement. We understand a little bit about these diviners that have told us lies and these false idol leadership that destroyed their proper shepherd leadership in our country. The trouble is we've got goats instead of sheep leaders. Now listen. I turn now to this passage concerning this great new Jerusalem of God, this new order of the ages. For God said, there shall be holiness unto Yahweh of hosts, and all the sacrifice shall come, and they're going to take of these pagans because they're going to seize therein in that day. They're going to seize. They're going to be so angry as these things develop that in this nation, in every nation of God's kingdom, his Jerusalem, his spiritual center, they're going to seize. And in their anger as they seize, they are in that day going to move against the enemy, seizing the enemy, and there's not going to be one single Canaanite left in the house of God. So I said, Dr. Cook, you can't talk that way. Well, Zechariah did, and I can read it. He said, well, I don't know any Canaanites. You don't? That's the trouble with the church. Jesus turned to those Jews and called them the generation of the serpent and the viper. In the 23rd chapter of Matthew, he said, you are the guilty of the blood of everybody that's been slain from Abel to Zechariah. He said, you fill up the measure of your fathers. Now, who killed Abel? Cain. And if they're guilty of the blood of Abel, they are Canaanites. And God made it clear they were Canaanites. These Canaanites are creating a lot of problem that ought to cause you to see all over the nation. But when they put their hands on worship and on prayer, and they want to make this as pagan a country, why, they, my friends, are playing in the hands of Moscow and America. Remember, if you're angry at the court, then be angry at Jewry that brought it to pass. I have Saturday, July 7th, Los Angeles Herald Examiner. Good paper, you know, it's getting a lot of things in it. Rabbis in stand on prayer. 22 simple words that brought a fury over America. This is the beginning of this article in the Herald Express. 22 simple words have brought a fury over America, invoking a major bulwark on what the country is based on, separation of church and state. With these words, Rabbi Israel Kohodes of Sinai Temple in West Los Angeles went on record today before his membership saying that all Jews must stand up and be counted and stand side by side and abide by this decision. All Jews must support the court where there are atheists of various and many kinds, and many can say, thank God I'm an atheist. The right to be an atheist is a great American right, said Rabbi Shodo. Has any government agency the right or duty to prescribe prayer? Has the government the right to pray? Have they a right to support prayer? In the opinion of the light of history, it shows that we must stand up for the abolition of all religion on all areas of government activity. In all areas of government activity. This is the Herald Express. Rabbis support the court against prayer. All right, I'm going to hold up United States News. Practically everybody's against the court here as we turn to congressmen and senators and leaders and former presidents. But the Rabbinical Association of America, the Rabbinical Association, the National New York Board of Rabbis, 100% supports the court and hopes for the abolition of all religious activity in the United States. And also, Jew Emanuel Seller of the House Judiciary, who only holds it by seniority because Bronx keeps on sending back with Brooklyn anyhow. And he in the judiciary is chairman of the judiciary, and he is supporting the position of the court in this unconstitutional decision, in this un-American, pagan, pro-communist decision. So the Jews prove themselves, and these magazines support them. But they identify themselves as waging war in your face. Now listen, as we said before, Herbert Hoover stood up and said Congress should immediately submit amendments to the Constitution to establish the right to religious devotion in every branch of every governmental agency, national, state, and local. Thank God for the vision of Herbert Hoover. Even Eisenhower's trying to get a little religion in his last days, and he says, I always thought that this nation was a religious nation. Cardinal Spellman spoke out, and he said, the Supreme Court decision frightens me because of the evil that's involved. Senator Eastman said he hoped that every devoted Christian family will realize how this decision reaches every Christian family and shows that the nation is being brought down the road to Supreme Court judicial tyranny. You know what? He's just what Senator Eastman, the head of the judiciary in the Senate, had to say. It's going to be almost impossible to get an amendment before Congress adjourns, because the man who sits on the judiciary in the House is this Jew Seller, and Seller says, I'm going to sit on it, and I'm not going to let any amendment on religion get out of this barrel before they adjourn. And I'm going to tell you that you should pray that God take the Jew off the ridge. I say again, whether it be right to serve man or God. And with it we pray that an awakening society, now stimulated to come out of their sleep by such an action, will be prodded to just a little bit more wakefulness until they seize, until every Canaanite leaves the house of God. You say you can't talk about depriving anybody of their citizenship. Well, these people have a dual allegiance. They're serving another country anyhow. They've already admitted they're serving another God. And when we open our Pledge of Allegiance to this nation under God, it's not to two gods, it's to one God, and that's the right God, and that's not a Jew God. And when they pledge their allegiance to another God, and they serve and work for another state, that's the place we ought to send them packing. There are many things that are descending on us fast. The socialist conspiracy, the social revolution, the pushing us into world government, the attempt to destroy our sovereignty, the weakening of our defenses, regardless of what they say, not enough things coming off the drawing board, not enough development in essential weapons in many areas, while at the same time we curb and hold back the leadership of our best generals. Though I can tell you one thing you might be interested in knowing. I have a dispatch here from Washington that tells you that out of that hearing, as it related to Thurman, a lot of things came out. And they sent an investigator over to Europe, and the Army Chief of Staff releases now a private letter that the officers who went over and studied the True Blue program with General Walker in Europe, commander of the United States Army in Europe, revealed to the newsmen the contents of this letter from General Decker, Army Chief of Staff, and it is to the effect that they have now assigned to all of the officers from the rank of captain on to the program of the True Blue Plan to once more reawaken our troops to the militant danger of communism. And they have interviewed and investigated General Walker's program. And the Army now admits in their documents, and in this secret document and letter I have here, that his program was good. There was nothing wrong with it. Nothing offensive. That Walker was right, and these who interfered with him were wrong. And it's quite evident they see it's a part of a conspiracy to destroy true Americanism that's tied right in with the Kennedy administration so far into it, this time America impeached the whole outfit. Now it's demonstrated that they have returned to the Army this program, and there's a lot of things that I haven't the time to discuss tonight, but it just goes to show you that there is something stirring, a lot of things waking up. Just pray that America wakes up before the enemy is on us with our locks not yet grown out as they were shored by Delilah. For a nation that has been turned to materialism has lost its spiritual lock. And a nation whose court can ban prayer from our schools is having the lock tripped pretty fast. I tell you tonight that one angry awakening church that never did anything that I ever knew about that resisted anything in any way, they were just getting ready to go to heaven sometime, making a lot of noise in the meantime, but that's all right, I guess, if they want to do that, be cheerful for a ball game tonight. But anyhow, I'll tell you what they said. They're starting to call on their young people when the fall term opens up in school to see that one of their, if their congregation has young people in every class, if someone's going to get up at the opening of the day and say, we're going to open this day with prayer, and whether the teachers scream or matter they oppose or what, they're going to pray in that school room. In fact, the design for massive resistance. The church better start fighting, because this court, they need to take away its tax exemption status anyhow. This court's going to wage war on the church, and it's time the church wage war on the court. This is a modern Ahab. We are under judicial tyranny. We need a court with well-defined limits on its power. We need a Congress with courage enough to carry this out. We respect the organization of our government with its legislative, judicial, and executive branch. We respect the principle of the Supreme Court. But we have little respect for most of the men on this court because they're not worthy of that respect. I want to point out to you, and you may read this in the United States News if you wish, that the day they ruled out prayer in the morning, they granted the freedom to the homosexuals to publish a rotten, filthy, illustrated magazine and call it educational and culture and said it wasn't offensive. Freedom for homosexuals, but denial of prayer to Christians. Within the same week, they also said that the laws on the on 27 states which say that it's illegal for an individual without a doctor's prescription to administer to themselves dope, and the use of dope by dope addicts is no longer a crime that you can arrest and put them in jail for, which countermands the laws in 27 states and makes it possible for the dope addicts and pushers to become absolutely free from interference or questioning by the law, forces of law, and 30% of all the Jew-controlled dope traffic that's been broke up has been broken up by the capture of the addict. This court is on the side of rottenness, obscenity, and evil, and against God. May the wrath not only rise up in the countenance of God's people till this great bunch of Canaanites leave, but may their proselytes in high power go with them. Let me assure you this, that you fought wars for far less, and you've been engaged in tremendous upsurges of national opinion, but never has there been one as spontaneous as this one, as deep-rooted, in which even churches are challenging their young people to give passive resistance and to refuse to obey man instead of God. These are the words of John. These are the words of Peter before the authority of ecclesiastical political power in Jerusalem in their day, is it better to serve man or God? When that court said, you can't preach in the name of Jesus, it's offensive to the Jews. I think we should grant immediate right of anybody that finds prayer offensive to leave America. All right. Did you know that the NAACP has been holding a massive conference down in Georgia? Tonight also ends another massive conference of those who lit a cross, the largest ever lit on Stone Mountain on 4th of July as a symbol of freedom. But while patriots were gathering, reaffirming their faith in the restoration of a constitutional America, thousands of Negroes stirred up by the NAACP, led by their Jew lawyers, were down there preparing fights against your privacy and your rights, of which they are discerning, to have no part of it free from invasion. Mr. Kennedy promised in his campaign that he was going to integrate all housing. They're demanding now that he do it. Did you know right now that the contractors, even those in federal housing projects, have notified the president that from 50 to 75% of all housing and all building programs will stop right now if the people know that they're going to, by law, be integrated? And Mr. Kennedy's just a little bit afraid of that loss of business, but he's promised he's going to carry it out before he's through. Did you know that Jew-led Negroes have been the last few days going from door to door in Burbank, trying to rent or buy a house in every block? Did you know that a Burbank newspaper is telling the people this is a good thing and inviting the Negroes to come over and occupy its streets and to fill its shopping districts and to move out into its houses? You know how to fight that? You should notify every advertiser of that newspaper that you're never again going to buy his product as long as his ad shows up in that paper. Did you know that an organization called CORE, which has left-wing and communist leadership in whole areas of the United States, is moving into every white settlement in Southern California right now? They're coming into Water Valley, they're moving everywhere, and they've got a few Jew real estate men who say they're going to put Negroes in every block. Don't you think it's time to see? We're not against Negroes having houses. They're living somewhere now. But we don't want them in our block, in our homes, in our society. And this, my friends, is to their best interest and ours. I'm going to tell you that this will continue until that spark, like a flame of revolution, as men reaffirm their rights, which are guaranteed by the Constitution to be certain rights, still prevailing to you. If you don't have the right to select your neighborhood, to make a binding contract with your friends, to choose your way of life, then you don't have any freedom at all. Someone said, oh, Lord, how long? You're almost at the end of the age. You're at the climax of the measure. Fortunately for you, these stirred minorities who work at the order of Antichrist and evil are in league with world communism, too. And the speed with which world communism seeks to step up its program will precipitate a crisis that's suddenly going to draw a line of demarcation in America, and it's going to put white men on one side, and Negroes that have become the instrument of this and Jews who have supported it are going to be well identified on the other side, and what happens in America will be of their own sowing. Did I still stand with this utter faith? God said, I'm going to add my presence to this situation. And he promises that the saints of the Most High God are going to take that kingdom again, possess it forever and ever. I see a day when there shall be peace. There'll be no strife among nations or among races, because the righteous shall rule the earth. I see when the policies of the international banker, and by the way, in Moscow tonight, 250 of the world bankers are gathered together, 18 of them from the United States. They're holding a great seminar to train all central banking banks how to operate under a world socialist and communist system. That's last week, July 2nd, the Herald Express, a special box telling you about it. And they're right now in Moscow. I'm going to be there all summer. Now, if the central banks of international Jewish banking can operate in Moscow and have successfully functioned through the Red Revolution and want to train all of their banks how to operate in a socialist, communist world, then you can see what they've got planned for you. And this is again going to be where Canaanites leave, holding paper in their hands and crying, "Oi," to the heavens. Lord Jesus, come quickly. Even so, come, Lord Jesus. We're going to speak next Friday night on the Blueprint of World Events as they relate to biblical prophecy. Because this week's events will add up to an ever-increasing crescendo of evidence concerning your time and your measure. Next Sunday afternoon, we're speaking on the law, the spirit, and the race question. Next Sunday evening, we speak on God's statement, "I will yet be inquired of." What's God going to be asked to do? This, my friends, is our subject for next Sunday evening. Now, we urge you tonight with your tithes and offerings to hold up our hands in the expanding program of the Tate Ministry. This program is well over the 16,000 point. We'll reach 16,000, some 650 tapes before we get through with this Wednesday's mailing out of tapes. So every one of the 50 tapes will these messages go. They'll go to England and France. They will go to Norway and Sweden. They will go to Denmark. They'll go to Germany, to South Africa. The subject this afternoon and this evening. We urge you to help us reach people with truth, and we urge you to help awaken the nation, because there's no way to do it any faster than by the processes of safe communication. This is Thus Saith the Lord, and there's no way to get Thus Saith the Lord to the attention of the people any faster. Now, we are increasing our staff because of the essentialness of doing this, with the burden of increasing mail and expanding tape work. This we must meet with the increased payroll program, and urge you to help us in doing this with your tithes and offerings, and help us in this expanding program of tape. The actual cost now has about doubled what your budget was originally a few years ago. This increase in your budget is largely due 100% to the tape program. We are putting out as much in the tape administration as it cost to operate this program before. And to do this operation correctly even now requires close to $500 every week to do this task. So we urge you with your tithes and offerings to hold up our hands to help us in carrying out this project. And do not forget that also the radio broadcast and program, XERB 1090 on your dial, the voice of truth every day, 9:15 in the morning. Do not forget that it's important we reach people during these vacation and summer months. Let's bring them out in the afternoon and the evening, and let's hit them out on Friday night. Bring your friends and relatives that visit you to compensate for those of your own congregation that are also traveling.